to all units, proceed to your post assignments. All units, proceed to your post assignments.
Yeah, baby, we've been doing it on Friday night, two-hour marathon sessions, and we can't get to all the questions, and now we're going to add a second edition of Ask the Inspector, the lightning round. We trim the fat, just the bare necessities. Time is of the essence. No faffing around. No tomfoolery. No fun. No wine. No jokes. Just military...
No substance.
Military precision. We are going to hold the weapons inspector to his commitment that no answer will exceed 3 minutes. You willingly submit. Is that right, Scott? Three minutes.
Twisted my arm. Yeah, that's how willingly I did this.
All right. And we have a timer each, and there'd be a tone that goes off when it gets to be 30 seconds from the limit. And then a buzzer, a very serious buzzer at the end. And if you violate it at all, you will be subject to the civilian version of a court-martial, and Tori is going to help us crack the whip. Is that true, Tori?
Yes.
All right, then.
So, you're telling me if I violate it, I'm getting whipped by a woman.
are you saying that's more of a reward than a punishment? If so,
I'm not saying the damn thing, Jeff. I'm just saying, come on, man. What is this, 50 shades of light gray?
if it turns out to be more of a reward, we will come up with a new punishment. Believe me, we are serious about this. All right. So let's get to the questions. And I have to remember after I ask the question to start the clock each time. I hope I do. Alex Russ Jur in Jur, whatever that means, Germany. When NATO abandons Ukraine and pulls out their support, do you think that Azov and other extremists could become terrorist groups turning against EU countries?
Yes, that's, of course, one of the big concerns. Azov has rightly been identified by the United States government and others prior to this current conflict as a white supremacist neo-Nazi group. For many years, members of Congress were trying to get the Azov battalion added to the foreign terrorist organization list. They are terrorists. They're murderer, rapist, thugs. They have no place in civil society. Hopefully the Russians will dispose of most of the combatants in as efficient a manner as possible. Those who don't die on the battlefield are wounded and taken prisoner. Hopefully they can be reprogrammed. But for those who seek to avoid capture and run for their lives, there should be no place for them to hide. I don't believe Europe will be a willing repository for them. Many of them will go underground, join criminal gangs, join terrorist organizations, because that's the only skill set they have. And they will terrorize the world for as long as they're allowed to live. Hopefully law enforcement and other security services will hunt them down and bring them to a swift justice.
All right. And actually, you may answer in less than 3 minutes, so that is certainly allowed. Let's move on to our second question. This is going swimmingly well so far.
One question.
That's all right. One in a row. We're doing great. All right. Yes, we are. So Robert Sheets from Youngstown. There's more than one Youngstown, but I guess that's one of them. As a WMD inspector in Iraq who participated with a high level of responsibility in Desert Storm in full knowledge that it was criminal, how can you critique this war and the employment of Nazi proxies?
Well, your question has a number of fundamental flaws. First, in the notion that Desert Storm was a criminal war. What foundation of law are you operating from? Operate from two foundations. One, constitutional law, because I'm a goddamn American. Okay, everything I did in Desert Storm was constitutionally correct, so kiss my ass. Two, international law. We happen to get the United Nations Security Council, in accordance with the United Nations Charter, to pass a goddamn Chapter 7 resolution authorizing use of military force. So where the fuck do you get off calling this illegal? Kiss my ass. Goodbye. Next question.
All right. It seems that the time limit does not affect Scott's passion one iota.
No, just don't call me a criminal.
I think I can comply with that request. Or demand.
Not you, Jeff. Look at you.
All right.
I just got to warn everybody that they got me spun up with my Telegram channel. I had some idiots challenging the Marine Corps history and questioning the bravery of the Marines and Iwo Jima flag raid. So I'm in a really, really sour mood right now. But that's okay because I have a mug. Ask me about my book, Jeff.
Scott, do you have some sort of a book that's available for purchase now?
It's amazing that you asked me that. You mean this book? Okay, see, I'm trying to get my sense of humor back. Boom. All right, thank you, Jeff. You calm me down. I'm ready. I apologize for my language. Let's move on.
That's right. Lionel Mandrake from Burpleson, Alaska. Burpleson. All right, now before we...
Burpleson, Arkansas.
I said Burpleson, Arkansas last week. Now, this is what I need to find out. I made two mistakes on this. I don't know if you're aware of this, that this is a fictional name. In a fictional place. It's from the movie Dr. Strangelove. From the way I reacted last week, it didn't sound like you caught on either.
Well, I got the Mandrake down. I got that. Burpleson, Alaska. Yep, I'm there. Dr. Strangelove, great movie, classic. Let's go. 3 minutes. Yeah. I'm on the clock.
That's Lionel. that's Lionel Mandrake. Peter Sellers was the Lionel Mandrake character.
Great movie.
And that's Burpleson Air Force Base. So I missed that, and I also thought that AK was Arkansas when it's Alaska. So
Alaska.
Anyway, we have our so-called Lionel Mandrake back again. This time, we're in the spirit with you. If American troops got slaughtered by the Taliban in Afghanistan the moment they lost their high-tech communication links, why doesn't NATO send super-duper high-tech American radio jamming devices to Ukraine along with sandals and old AKs?
Why would NATO want to jam American communications? I don't understand. I know where he's coming from. I said that the United States seeks to have dominance of the total spectrum of warfare, and that our troops are hampered by the need to have connectivity all the time, every time, with perfect intelligence, perfect communications. Yes, Maverick was barking. And that if you jam that, they could get in trouble. And oftentimes did get in trouble, and it was only close air support that saved them. I think we have provided the Ukrainians with super-duper high-tech jamming equipment. They use it. The interesting thing about jamming equipment is that it emits a signal. I just want to give you that pro tip. And anytime you emit a signal, the enemy can detect the signal and they can focus in on the signal and kill you. So it's not as easy as everybody thinks it is, but that's okay. I mean, next question. Wow. I know he means jamming Russian communications. Believe me, they're trying to jam Russian communications, but a jammer emits a signal. So you're at risk too. It's like a radar emits a signal. Anything that emits a signal can be triangulated and destroyed. So yeah, you can jam Russian comms, but the Russians are jamming your comms. It's called electronic warfare. And I think right now the Russians are probably practicing a little bit better than the Ukrainians.
All right. Pavel Sukhov is wondering if by any chance there's some sort of a book out that.
Well, Paul, thank you for asking about my book. You mean this one, Disarmament in the Time of Perestroika? Yeah, it's out. It's available. Right now it's available in the English language. You can get it on the Clarity Press website, or you can get it through ScottRitterExtra.com. Click the thing and Jeff and Tori get a nice little bonus. And it's coming out in several languages, Russian, Italian, Arabic. See, it's doing quite well. Thank you for your question.
ScottRitterExtra.com. We've got a page devoted to the book. Let's move on to the next question. Jim J. from somewhere in Europe. Are you familiar with CNA, Center for Naval Analysis? Can they be trusted to provide it? Don't laugh before I'm done with the question. That's also a cause for a court-martial. Can they be trusted to provide objective and neutral assessment of the situation in Ukraine?
It's funny you mentioned the Center for Naval Analysis. If you would read my book, Disarmament in the Time of Perestroika, I talk about a certain individual. I won't use his name here because I'm sure it's in the book, John Sartorius. John Sartorius, one of my dearest friends, one of the smartest people I ever dealt with, literally. Guy's a genius on every account. Can't run worth a damn, but that's okay. He was in the Army. He worked for the Center for Naval Analysis before he came over as a weapons inspector. And I will tell you this about John Sartorius. The man has the highest integrity. He has an intellectual capacity that's just stunning. And if he provided analysis, you could take it to the bank. Now, this, of course, was 1986, 1987, 1988. But I would imagine that the same level of professionalism that exists in the Center of Naval Analysis back in the 1980s has carried on to this date. I would have to review what they're writing. I'll be honest, I haven't reviewed the CNA's work recently, but I would imagine that, like all analysis, it should be read. The sources should be confirmed. Biases should be understood beforehand. And everything should be treated with a grain of salt. If you are relying upon your final assessment based solely upon what any outlet writes, including the Center for Naval Analysis, then you're probably doing it wrong. The best thing is to read a number of sources, including CNA's work, and then decide for yourself where you fall in on the various facts and issues.
All right. Our Quebec Angel says he likes it when you drop the F-bomb. This subject matter calls for such passion. All right.
Something, but my wife would destroy me for gratuitous use of the F-bomb. You have to really get me mad, and then I'll use it.
All right. Yeah, it's real. That's the beauty of it. You don't just say it gratuitously. It loses its oomph if you overuse it. Marcos from Buenos Aires, Argentina. Is there a chance that Russia eventually hits the NATO weapon hub in Zhizhov? I actually rehearsed this, and I'm still not getting it right. Zhizhov, I think. And what about the 30,000 U.S. NATO troops deployed to different countries at the Ukraine border, according to Shoigu? Thanks for the great show. Well, you're welcome, Marcos. Thanks for the compliment.
The only way Russia would hit the NATO weapon hub at that place would be if NATO physically intervened in Ukraine, became an official party to the conflict, and the war spread from Ukraine into NATO nations. And then Russia would hit it, but that would be the least of everybody's worries, because Russia would be hitting other targets as well. And this conflict could very well go nuclear in a very short period of time, and then it doesn't matter. Which is why Russia will never bomb that weapons depot, because that weapons depot won't be bombed unless NATO enters Ukraine, and NATO's not going to go enter Ukraine, especially with the 30,000 troops that they have mustered in Poland and the Baltic states down in Romania. I mean, it is 30,000 troops. They are in a high state of readiness, but, you know, keeping in mind that Russia just mobilized 300,000 troops to join the estimated 210,000 troops that are already deployed into the area of special military operation, with another 85 to 100,000 volunteers currently being mustered in. The 30,000 really don't impress too many people, including the Russians.
All right. Every answer coming in under 3 minutes. You really take this seriously. Jason from Toronto. President Zelensky said he won't go to the G20 summit if Putin goes. What are your thoughts on a president of a country taking such a stance? Where I'm from, we'd say that's a sucker move. He's a wimp.
Well, I mean, Maverick agrees. Well, not Maverick, double agrees. Maverick, you made your point. But I think it was the baby crying that got Maverick off. Thanks, Jeff. Okay, buddy. Don't do it. Okay, now my clock. I'm going to run into this buzzer, and then I'm in trouble. I would get whipped. But you're destroying my answer. Look, Zelensky reminds me of me when I was in third grade, and I found out that, you know, Carl Smith, who insulted me at recess, was going to be at a birthday party. And I say, wah, wah, I'm not going to go. It's a childlike maneuver. Zelensky had any credibility as a leader. He'd go there and he'd stare Putin in the eyes. That's what a real man does, or a real woman. But he doesn't. And yeah, Ukraine's not a G20 country. That's true. But I think given the circumstances, the fact that they're going to be discussing Ukraine in every other breath, Zelensky would be invited. In fact, is invited. You know, Zelensky's literally a non-factor anymore. The bottom line is he has no economy, he has no military, he has nothing. He's propped up by NATO, by the West, by the G20, the G7. And that's it, a man of no substance. He's not going to be a decision maker when the final decision is made about the fate of Ukraine.
All right. Well said, Major. Let's move on to our next question. And this is Mohammed from Egypt. Do you think Putin really believes in the golden billion theory? To my surprise, he referred to it in his book and in a recent speech.
I would say this about the Russian president, that I don't believe
we have a good relationship with Russia.
I'm sorry. That's
believe me.
You do want me to get whipped. I know you do. But I would say this about the Russian president, that I don't believe, well, he has a great sense of humor. Again, I can't speak to that personally because I've never met him. It appears he has a great sense of humor. And he doesn't take everything in this world seriously. When he speaks and he writes and the speech and the written word relates back to him personally, I think he's a very serious individual. So I don't believe that. I don't believe that Putin would. I'm going to get whipped. Oh no! I don't believe that Putin would make reference to the golden billion unless he actually believed in it.
All right, I'm having a slight malfunction with my clock thing. This is the first time we're using it, so please bear with me, folks.
Wait, so you're telling me I had more than 30 seconds?
I don't even know. I was trying to stop it after the first one, and it wouldn't stop. And it, I don't know. Where. Go ahead. Let's give Scott an extra 30 seconds. Go ahead.
No, I'm okay.
All right, the clock just ran.
Wait,
out.
Where's the whip?
No, give me. I deserve the whip, or the app that I'm using deserves the whip.
You're doing all right, this hopefully, on purpose. You just went to where to whip you.
hopefully, it'll work the rest of the time. Let's see. All right, next question. Sista Akos or Akos Music? Why do you think Russia won't attack the United States?
Because Russia's not suicidal. There's no reason for Russia to attack the United States. Russia will gain nothing from attacking the United States. Russia's goals and objectives are to find a way to peacefully coexist with the United States. And therefore, Russia's not going to attack the United States, nor is the United States going to attack Russia for the very same reasons, except that we aren't looking for a way to peacefully coexist with Russia. We're looking for a way to undermine Russia and corrupt it from within.
All right, let me see if I can stop the clock this time. I think I did. All right.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Look, you've caused problems.
What's the matter?
Didn't you read her comment?
No.
About the shot glass?
No, what did it say? Oh, there it is now. Scott, since you lick my mug, next time I'll get you some shot glasses with this customized print. I went over 3 minutes. Time to take a shot of vodka. Jeff approves. All right. Good idea. Greg from Japan. Would Russia arming Syria with sufficient weapons to kill U.S. soldiers, illegally occupying Syria, be a geopolitical response to the U.S. Empire's killing of Russian soldiers in Ukraine?
The question implies that there is a sense of moral equivalency between the Russian government and the American government. The Americans have already publicly said that it is their goal to make Russia pay a price, to make Russia feel pain. And that pain is expressed in the form of dead bodies. The Russians don't operate that way. Russia's not out to inflict pain on anybody. Russia's out to stabilize an unstable situation in Europe, to engender a new European security framework in a post-Ukraine conflict. In order to do that, Russia needs the United States to be on the other side of the table, able and willing to negotiate. The American people are far more immature than the Russian people, meaning that if we start taking just take a look at how we whined about something that didn't happen, the so-called Russian bounty paid to the Taliban to kill Americans. Never happened, but man, we were up in arms. You want to get the American people up in arms, have Russia start arming Syrians for the specific goal of killing American service members. And while it may feel good, and I mean, Russians will drink vodka in secret behind the back, hey, we killed some Americans, it doesn't solve the problem. In fact, it makes the problem more difficult to solve. That's why I say, thank God there's at least one adult in the room, and that adult is Russia.
All right, let's move on to our next question. And now we go to Dale in Ohio. You know Dale in Ohio. For me, it's obvious why Poland is siding with Ukraine. They still want Moscow back. The liberation of Moscow from Polish-Lithuanian in 1612 is so ingrained in the two cultures. Why do Westerners have short memories of our conflicts?
You actually found a picture to go with that question? You've done your homework?
The Battle of Moscow. Yep.
Wow.
This is a professional podcast.
Well, that just shows that you're cheating. See, these are the first time I'm seeing the questions, but you've rehearsed them. Not fair, Jeff. Not fair. Okay, I'm on my 3 minutes. First of all, Jeff knows more about the Battle for Moscow in 1612 than 99.96% of all Americans who don't know anything about it. So we can't forget that which we don't know. And that's half the problem, is that Americans don't have appreciation for the history of that which ails much of Europe. We're under the impression that we can work and create the European Union that becomes a utopia and foregoes the historical baggage that's out there. They can't. As for the Poles wanting Moscow, good luck, guys. That was a sarcastic good luck, because I don't think the Russians are going to go along with that game. But
was that the end of your answer?
Yeah, under 3 minutes, man. You might have to tighten this thing up to 2 minutes to get me to buzz, because I ain't going there. Tori ain't whipping me.
All right. Sometimes it's a little hard to tell when you're just taking a breath versus you're finished with the question. Okay. I'll try to zone in on your vibe. Alex from Toronto, Canada. Where can I find a video of the Ritter versus Hitchens debate? I found the audio version and it's very good. Why not release it again and promote it? I was very impressed by how well Scott did against arguably one of the best debaters out there.
Well, first of all, I agree. Christopher Hitchens was one of the best debaters out there. He's at least number two in my book. I wonder who's number one. But
Noam Chomsky?
Touche. But no, look, to the best of my knowledge, there was no video made of that event. It was only audio. I can talk to Jeff about releasing that audio if we can get that and put it on our webpage. I don't know, scottritterextra.com. You know, the Ritter debating experience for anybody who wants to dare follow down that path of self-destructive behavior that was blazed by Christopher Hitchens. I have to say that he had to fortify himself with whiskey that he held in a brown paper bag the entire time. But I'm not joking, but I shouldn't have said that. He did a good job.
It's hardly a secret.
No, it's not a secret. No, but he was in control of himself the whole time. I just think he was on the wrong side of history. And no matter how skilled you are as an orator, you can't cure that kind of fatal flaw. When the foundation of your argument is based on the corruption of the ideas, you're not going to win any debate. I mean, come on, man, he lost against a Marine. So, you know, hey.
Okay. So I was just trying to remember, he had this great line. He was once on an interview. Remember the old Hannity and Combs show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was something like, he said, I'll come back to it later. Let's see.
So much for your preparation, Jeff. We'll call that preparation H.
Now, when you're talking about how witty is, it made me think of something that really funny he said, but I can't remember. I don't want to mess up the quote. I got to try to remember the exact one.
All right.
All right. So
maybe
how do we
Tori
get this?
Can Google it and email it to you.
She won't know what to look for, though.
Oh.
All right. Our angel from Quebec, Richie Molina. By the way, Scott, you folks might have noticed we no longer have the audio problem we had before when we talk over each other. There's no feedback. Scott is now using a new computer, and it'll get even better in a few days when he plugs a microphone into it, but it's already a lot better thanks to our angel in Quebec. All right, and here's a question from him. Is Germany's eventual pivot sufficient to start the domino effect that will unravel the EU? If so, will it dissuade the current U.S. administration from its present stance, or will they continue driving that bus off the cliff at all costs?
Well, I do believe that Germany will eventually pivot, and I do believe that because the German economy is the foundation of Europe. It's upon the German economy that the whole Eurozone is built. And if you remove the Germans from that equation, then that's the end of the EU. So yeah, the German pivot has the potential on unraveling the EU, unless the EU pivots with Germany. And that's always a possibility, given the fact that I don't think there's any nation in the EU, except maybe France, that believes that they can sustain themselves economically independent of a union with Germany. As for the United States, right now, the biggest problem facing the United States is the need to negotiate with itself a soft landing from the fall that we are currently experiencing as the world's singular hegemon down to a reality of a multipolar world. I say negotiate with ourselves because the world's willing to work with us to help us have the softest landing possible. We, on the other hand, encumbered with our own hubris, our own arrogance. I think hubris and arrogance might be the same thing. Ignorance and the narcissism, national narcissism. We're not willing to do that. And I think we are going to be heading towards a cliff. Now, what I would say to all the people that call themselves friends of America, friends don't let friends drive drunk. And right now, America is at the wheel of a bus heading to a cliff, and we're drunk on our pride, our ignorance, everything. Please help us by getting into the bus, hitting the brake, and taking the keys out of the ignition so we don't drive over that cliff.
Oh, your gift for metaphors is so wonderful. Big applause for it. Hang on a second.
Did I tell you I write books too? Well, I just
want to tell you. America is drunk. Let's move on to our next question, and it is from Oregon. Jackie Owl, are governments aware of intelligence gathering by U.S. health insurers operating in the UK, Serbia, Spain, Australia, etc.? You can buy those medical and psychiatric records.
I don't know. I mean, I've heard of this. I can't say I'm aware of it, meaning I don't know that it's – I'm not doubting this. I'm just saying I can't corroborate this as saying, yes, that's 100% true. I have gone out and bought those medical and psychiatric records. I can't say that. And therefore, I don't know if governments are aware of that, but it's a good point. Thanks for bringing it up. And all the super sleuths out there, help us out. Find out if that is indeed the case. Go buy my medical and psychiatric records. Well, good luck with that. And when you get them, send them to me. I'd like to know what's in it.
Wow. That's quite the encouragement there. Alex from Burlington, Ontario. Knowing Western weapons, training, and logistics are contributing to kill thousands of Russian soldiers and civilians, why would Russia allow the West to flood Ukraine to this extent? Why not bomb border cities with Poland?
Again, that's a question that ultimately left to the Russian high command, Russian political command. I would say this as someone assessing the situation, that Russia is confident in its ability to prevail under the current circumstances, regardless of how difficult those circumstances are, that you don't initiate an action under these conditions unless you have guaranteed outcome, and that the Russian bombing these cities that you speak of may produce an outcome that is unpredictable. For instance, compelling Poland to intervene, citing humanitarian circumstances as a justification, thereby overly complicating Russia's posture, because the world may in fact side on the side of Poland if you bomb these cities in such a manner that there is a genuine humanitarian catastrophe. Right now, Russia says, why do we need that headache? This is my opinion. Why do we need that headache? Why would we go down that route? Right now, just let them flood. Plus, Russia's getting the secondary benefit of basically destroying NATO's arsenal, weakening NATO, not just physically in terms of the equipment that they're being destroyed, but from a moral perspective. So NATO's losing face. So Russia's, this is a win-win-win-win with a bunch of losses, and those losses are measured in dead soldiers, and that's a big deal. But it's a cost I believe Russia's willing to bear, because those soldiers will die in an outcome that seems to be a guaranteed Russian victory, as opposed to throwing those soldiers' lives away by engaging something that may feel good at the moment but cost you victory in the long term.
All right. Since you answered every question under 3 minutes, we have time to take some live questions. Tori, hope that's enough warning for you, about a half a second warning I just gave you. Yeah. Let's see what kind of questions.
I'm just going with the super chat first.
All right. Gideon Levy calls Israeli leadership neo-Nazis. Agree?
Politically charged question. I agree that the Israelis behave in a manner that has a lot of similarities with the behaviors of racially supremacist, overly oppressive regimes. One only has to take a look at the Israeli practice of building walls to understand there's a certain apartheid characteristic there, turning Palestinian majority areas into virtual ghettos. That has a sort of a history attached to it in the 1940s, the way the Germans treated certain ghettos in Poland and elsewhere. The fact that the Israelis view themselves as a superior race, a race above all else, mirrors, you know, Aryan racial supremacy. I think Gideon Levy has every right to say what he says, and I'm not going to debate him on that issue.
All right. So what you're saying is you're jealous. You're not one of the chosen people. Okay.
I didn't say that, Jeff. Don't put words in my mouth. If I was one of the chosen people, I would behave in a manner which reflected pride in my culture, my religion, my heritage, and I would do so in a manner which was not disruptive or destructive to other people's lives.
All righty then. Al Swearingen. Scott, what effect will NASAMS have on the onslaught of Russian missiles?
I don't know, but we're going to find out. I mean, this is sort of one of the million-dollar questions, and I bet you there's a lot of people in NATO and the United States are waiting to answer that question too, because it's like, holy cow, we just gave the system that protects Washington, D.C. It better work. And we'll find out. I think the Russians have made targeting the system a high priority, but the Russians may also want to throw a bunch of low-value missiles in their direction so that the Ukrainians fire their high-value missiles and then put NATO in the very difficult situation of saying, hey, we're out of ammo, resupply up. And NATO goes, we ain't got any more. We're out of money. We don't have any more missiles. You know, this is just a stupid thing that NATO did. You know, the better thing would have been able to bring in systems that former Soviet systems, S-300 type systems that can be readily integrated into the existing Ukrainian air defense network. NASAMS can't be integrated. NASAMS is a standalone system. So it has a limited area of operations. The Russians are going to figure it out. They're going to target it. And I think they're going to have these things destroyed in relatively short order.
Okay. Nigel Lacey asks Scott, what's the truth about Malaysia Flight 17? Hey, Scott, what's the truth about Malaysia Flight 17?
It was shot down. That's the absolute truth. I bet you he wants me to commit to who done it. And I can say that right now it's it doesn't appear that there is a an answer either way. The Russians have made a solid case that it isn't them. There's a lot of suspicion on people in the West that it was them, or at least people, their proxies. And I would say that we need to wait for the final investigation to be done. And I know the response there is you can't trust a final investigation. And then it's going to be one of these perpetually open questions. You know, Russia has some information that, you know, it could probably share, but it would give away sources and intelligence capabilities. The West claimed to have information from sources and intelligence sources, but has failed to produce those. I'm inclined to lean towards the Russian version right now, but I'm not going to go 100% because I think the investigation still needs to be run to ground.
Okay. I'm curious where these people commenting on YouTube are from, because unlike Friday night, we're streaming live at a time that's convenient, more convenient for the majority of Europe and Russia. Friday night, it's, you know, after midnight, like 3 in the morning or something like that for a good part of the country. But this is prime time. Mads Olsen, why haven't Russia, that would be hasn't Russia, cut supplies from West Ukraine 8 months ago?
Grammar Nazi. God, I
quit. when you don't know anything, you have to grasp at loose straws to try to be right about something.
Well, you found the loose straw, my friend. Yeah. Okay, am I on the clock?
No.
It's a good question. Why hasn't Russia cut supplies from West Ukraine 8 months ago? Well, one, have you taken a look at the size of the border that Ukraine has with all these NATO countries, especially in the Carpathian region? Where people have been smuggling things for centuries and have not been uncovered. Yes, you can say Russia should have bombed the trains, bombed the roads, bombed this, bombed that, but then that violates the very premise of the special military operation, which was to reduce the damage to Ukrainian infrastructure as much as possible. You know, and now we have a situation where the United States has some paramilitary, you hear Maverick, paramilitary people and you know, special operators on the ground who are very good at what they do, and they're overseeing this covert transfer. They're using routes, new routes. They're changing it up, different warehouses, etc. It's a tough target. Ultimately, Russia won't be able to solve this problem until they have eyeballs on the Polish border, Romanian border, staring over, basically sealing off the border. Until then, this is going to be a perpetual problem because it requires Russia to solve this requires Russia to invest an amount of strategic air interdiction capabilities that it apparently has made a decision it's not worth it. They're not willing to lose the number of aircraft necessary to accomplish that task. They'd rather have that stuff come to the front line and let the troops take care of it because they are taking care of it.
Okay, Rex Magnum. That sounds like a porn actor's name. Would it be a correct analysis to say Russia put its military machine in drive, took the foot off the brake, but has yet to put the pedal to the floor? So you're not the only one who speaks in metaphors.
I like this one. I'm taking it. Yes, right. You are 100% correct. That is a good metaphor. Rex, delete him. We're stealing this. He doesn't exist. We want no evidence of this. So when I use it next time, Rex can't charge me money and say, I came up with that. No, thank you, Rex. That's a very good analogy. And I think you're right. I think Russia is basically, it now is assembling the military capability to accomplish that which it, you know, it wants to accomplish. But they aren't at the point yet where they can actually begin those offensive operations. I think there's some things that have to happen, like let the Ukrainians commit suicide. One of the things in the military is when the enemy's doing that which you want them to do, don't stop them. And right now the Ukrainians are just throwing themselves at prepared Russian defenses and they're suffering heavy casualties. So why not just let them continue that? I know the Russians are suffering casualties too. I'm not going to pretend that they're not. But offensive operations are bloodier than defensive operations. Right now, the Ukrainians are playing to the Russian strength. Let I think the Russians want to let the Ukrainians grind themselves down a little bit more. I think the Russians want to solve some of this air defense problems that are being brought to bear, get a grip on that. And then, to quote the gentleman, the foot goes on the pedal and the pedal to the metal, and then it's over.
All right. Rock and roll, baby. David's View. Thanks for the super chat. Any idea why the U.S. Department of Defense started 2022 National Defense Strategy Nuclear Posture Review? I guess he's saying that was reported by NPR.
Any idea why they started it? Or why? I don't understand the question. The National Defense Strategy is mandated by Congress. And so the Department of Defense has to, in the White House, has to issue this. The Nuclear Posture Review is done in coordination with the National Defense Strategy. Usually they release them as separate documents. Here they've incorporated them in a singular document because it's taken so long. I mean, we're the second year into the Biden administration, and we're just now getting this document. So I think that's why they were both released together. And I think I answered the question. I don't know.
All right. Well, the important thing is
we missed a question about Marines.
That was a statement, not a question, but if you want to see it, there it is.
In a speech, Putin used the word U.S. likes to intimidate. I was a Marine for 10 years. Russia doesn't believe we want to tango for real. I would like to believe that Russia hopes we don't want to tango for real. I don't think anybody in Russia is dying to fight the United States. And honestly speaking, I spent a lot of time actually training to fight these guys. And while we were prepared to do it, I don't think any of us were actually lining up saying, let's do it now, because the training was pretty damn tough. And just a quick war story. I was trying to convince my boss that we need to change the way we train to fight, that we were sort of trapped in old World War II, Korean War, Vietnam doctrine, and that we needed to get a lot more mobile and creative in our targeting. And there was resistance because, the guys that were actually pulling the lanyards on the howitzers were taught their certain way in school. So I got them to go to the National Training Center, NTC, at Fort Irwin, where the United States Army back in the 1980s had two regiments of troops organized as Soviet motorized rifle regiments. And they would do force-on-force engagements with U.S. Army units using something called MILES. It was basically a laser engagement thing. The rifles, every time you fired around, the laser beam would go out, hit you, you die. You could do the same thing to tanks, da da da. Pretty realistic, except there's no blood, just dead people. And we got to ride with the Soviets, and it was pretty cool because the final attack, you're up at 3 a.m. They're sending out the reconnaissance elements. He's riding the commander's tank, I'm riding the XO's tank, and here we are, 170 vehicles screaming through the U.S. defenses. We started the attack at 3:30. By 5 o'clock, we were on the final objective, having crushed the Americans. And my boss is going, damn, that was great. Damn, that was great. That was awesome. And I said, sir, we're the bad guys. That's us. What just happened here is us. That's what's going to happen to us unless we learn how to fight these guys smarter. And he thought about it a second. And he gave me control of the training plan because we weren't doing it right. The point is, we respected the Soviet threat, and people would be wise to respect the Russian threat today. While we don't shy away from a fight if it's forced upon us, nobody should be seeking a fight with the Russians, just like no Russian should be seeking a fight with us. We're two serious armies. When two serious armies get together on the battlefield, there's serious casualties.
All right. I'm getting the hang of how to stop the clock and restart it each time. This is going great. Serge, do we say Serge or Sergey? Serge, maybe.
Serge.
Lubumadrovov. Are we heading? Go ahead.
I can't help you on that
one. Oh. Lubumadrov. Are we heading toward the Gulf of Odessa resolution?
That's a play on the Gulf of Tonkin resolution that got us sucked into the Vietnam War. No. I mean, the British are doing some pretty stupid things in the Black Sea that are very provocative. Russia says they'll respond either symmetrically or asymmetrically at a time and place of their choosing, but I don't think the Russian response will be done in a way that triggers Article 5 of the NATO Charter, because that's the last thing Russia wants. And the United States doesn't want a conflict here. So we're not going to deliberately try and create a provocation that that gives us justification for what going into Odessa. We're not going to fight and die for Odessa. Odessa is a Russian city. We know that. I mean, we're not going to admit it. It's a Ukrainian city. Oh, yes, Ukraine should defend it. But at the end of the day, you know, how many American boys do we want to lose for Odessa? And the answer is zero, none, zip. So I don't believe there's going to be a Gulf of Odessa resolution. I don't think the United States is looking for a war with Russia. I think the United States is looking to extend this conflict as long as possible to the last Ukrainian, to quote Lindsey Graham, in an effort to do the most possible damage to the Russians without actually having to get into a knockout, down, drag out fight between the U.S., NATO, and Russia.
All right. Thanks to Wilhelm for the support there. And let's move on to Rizka Karadwipa. See, this is just like Friday night. Nobody, literally nobody has a name that I can pronounce. Who is going to win U.S. midterm election? And any outcome will change geopolitics toward the U.S.
Who is going to win the U.S. midterm election? God, if you just waited a couple hours, I could answer that question definitively. But I think the Republican.
I don't even understand the question. Does he mean which party is going to carry it? Or, I mean, think because so, there's a lot of different elections, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think now we're talking about control of Congress. That's right. What's at stake here. And I believe the House is not only going to be won by the Republicans, but won with an overwhelming majority, meaning the Republicans will be strongly in charge in the House, where there won't be any resistance from the Democrats because the Russians will so totally control the vote count. And I believe the Russians could be looked at the Russians. Well, the Russians admitted now that they've interfered in our election. So, you know, what the hell? I think the Republicans are going to take the Senate too. And I think we're probably looking at 54 seats. That's what some conservative estimates have, 54 seats. And if this is the case, as Joe Biden said in one of his few moments of,
Oh, sorry. That was from the previous question. Go ahead. Keep going.
As Joe Biden said, for the Democrats to lose control of Congress would be a defeat for his 2-year term. You're right, Joe. You done lost. It's going to be, and you can have the veto pin all you want. You know what the Republicans have? Impeachment. Revenge is a dish best served cold. I'm not saying they should impeach him. I'm just saying that I bet you impeachment comes up.
All right. Speaking of which, let me see if we can get this on camera.
Then you got it right.
Oh, Tori, get rid of that comment for a second.
Oh, sorry. Here. Whoops, sorry. Here we go.
There we go. I voted. Did you vote today, Scott?
No, I'm taking Marina to the polls when I pick her up at work. We're going to vote together.
All right. Just trying to promote participatory democracy. Justin O'Donnell, thanks for the $5. Scott, the CEO of Ukraine Post, visited our U.S. company this week to buy a parcel or letter sorting equipment. Does this seem strange to you?
No, because I don't know the state of Ukraine's parcel letter sorting technology. If the Ukrainians are having trouble with that, why not come to the United States and take a look at it, since you buy everything else from us, or in fact, it's given to you. I would imagine that he's not going to buy anything, because I would imagine that Ukraine Post has the same budgetary problems that the rest of Ukraine has, which means they have no money. So this is the United States providing him with U.S. taxpayer money. And I think there's probably some Title I strings attached to it, which means that he has to come to the United States and spend that money. So I don't think he has the right to take American taxpayer money and say, I want to go to the German postal sorting thing. No, he has to come to us and buy it from an American company, so that the U.S. taxpayer money is therefore reinvested into the United States. That's what I think is going on.
I'm surprised he didn't go to Tory's employer, Amazon. They actually deliver packages promptly, as promised.
Wow. There's a dig at the Postal Service.
Hocus Pocus. Scott, is the SMO restraint meaningless if Russia is delivering critical damage to the Ukrainian grid? Where are the limits if an SMO, special military operation, can turn a country dark?
I think Russia's sort of lost its appetite for the SMO and the majority of this restraint. I think the Russians are taking the gloves off. They're doing it in a fairly deliberative fashion. Some of the sites that have been struck in a manner which allows reconstitution. Others have been struck in a manner which makes the refurbishment is more difficult. But I think the Russian objective right now is to darken Ukraine, make Ukraine suffer, create political unrest to destabilize and undermine the legitimacy of the Zelensky government, and in doing so, hasten the collapse of Ukraine and Ukrainian resistance to Russia. So, yeah, I don't think there's SMO restraint going on too much anymore.
Okay. This, again, not so much a question as a statement, but Tory is an equal opportunity employer. It doesn't have to have a question mark, but I don't know if you want to address this or not, Scott. Go ahead.
Everybody puffs their chest out and thumps it and says, I'm not afraid of you. Then take a swing. I mean, I've been in many a bar situation where the person said, I ain't afraid of you. Okay. What are you going to do about it? I mean, I don't care. Words mean nothing. It's actions. The fact that you're not taking a swing at me means you understand what the consequences of taking a swing at me could be. And I'm pretty sure that's how the United States and Russia are. We're not going to sit there and say, oh, I'm afraid of you. We're going to say, I ain't afraid of you. No one's swinging. Everybody just standing there looking at each other. That's okay. That's cool. It'd be nice if we got to the point where it says, I don't feel like I need to be afraid of you because we're actually working constructively towards a common objective of global peace and security. But maybe I was smoking some dope when I came up with that statement. I don't know. But that's my answer.
Just making tea. Correction, Scott. Have you ever heard about a Russian doomsday system, dead hand or perimeter? Do you think it's real?
I know it's real. Again, don't want to be too self-promoting, but here we are. The wonderful book.
You're past that point.
But self-promoting? I know, because I'm on this damn show with you. The biggest self-promotion there is. and ScottRitterExtra.com, your one shop stop for everything related to Scott Ritter. Free of charge. There is no paywall. But if you feel so inclined to help Scott Ritter fill this mug with Diet Coke, please contribute. Was that good, Jeff? Am I on the clock?
That was a great pitch.
All right. Where were we? Perimeter. Okay. War story. You got to give me more than 3 minutes for a war story.
All right. I'll stop.
Give me 3 minutes exactly for a war story. Tell me when to go.
Go.
We had a situation at the missile plant that I was involved in the inspections where we had a giant x-ray facility that was supposed to x-ray these missiles coming out. And the Russians had some problems with the way we set it up, but we finally got it set up where we think we're ready to x-ray, but the Russians delayed. And during that delay, the Russians snuck 3 missiles out. And I highlighted those missiles because I'm a hell of an intelligence officer, read about in the book. And I said, those 3 missiles are special. They'll never let us x-ray them. And I didn't know how special they were, but it turns out that was the final 3 missiles of what that time was called the Sirena system, which was a modified SS-25 intercontinental ballistic missile, which instead of a warhead contained a communications package because it was part of the perimeter or dead hand system. And if we ever launched a preemptive strike against the Russians seeking to decapitate their leadership, these missiles would be launched, fly over the Soviet Union, and broadcast automatic launch codes so that all of the Russian missiles would be launched. So yeah, the dead hand exists. I saw three of the 9 Sirena missiles that were created to support the road mobile version of it.
All right, that's well under 3 minutes. I got to just remember to stop the clock each time and then restart it. Our angel in Quebec, will Washington funnel as much money as possible during the lame duck session if they lose Congress? Could this accelerate Russia's response?
I think the Biden administration has made it clear that if there's a lame duck session, it's going to try and push a $40 to $60 billion aid package through the lame duck Congress. One of the reasons why there's these so-called on-site inspection teams in Ukraine right now is that they are trying to account for the weapons, where they are, how they were, were they used, are they still in storage, or have they been sold on the black market? Because this question is going to arise during this lame duck session. If the Pentagon doesn't have a sufficient answer, then that could threaten the $40 to $60 billion package that Biden's trying to push through.
Okay. So that about wraps it up. I was surprised that your answers were under 3 minutes. That gave us time for some of the live questions, so we can adjust as we go on. But I think
I went to the verbal gym and I was working out. I mean, I was sitting there, working on addiction, get my jaw strong so I could sustain the argument. I took some special pills so my brain worked. I'll slow it down next. I'll try and slow down. I'll eat some crayons because everybody accuses the Marines of liking to eat crayons. They're right. Some people like the red. I like the green. But so I'll try and dumb myself down so that I get. Can you give me one of my rut? Was I over 2 minutes? I mean, how much dumb do I have to get?
No, I think it was fine. I mean, let's watch the recording and assess. But I think it was fine. I'm simply saying it surprised me. It's probably a good thing that we had room for the live questions as well. Friday night, we're still going to do the usual, where Scott is a little bit more, what's the word we're looking for? Thorough, extensive.
Loquacious.
Loquacious. So, and also, hold on, let me get the right one on there. That's Friday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern.
Subliminal,
time.
Mr. Subliminal. Yeah.
Well, actually, I was planning to do that one too, but in the other order. So,
well, Tori, I have an announcement to make. Oh, can I make an announcement?
Sure, why not?
No, go ahead. You're doing something with Tori. Just come back to me.
All right. Well, Tori and I do another podcast, and it's going to be later today in a few hours. Tori, you want to come on and just tell people what this week's episode is about? Every Tuesday at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific.
Yep. So we're going to be – our guest tonight is Eric Ramirez. He's a Best Buy salesman that Jeff met when he was buying his new computer and monitor. We're going to be covering several different topics. We're going to talk about how technology has evolved. We're going to talk about how the good, the bad, and the ugly of that, which should be interesting. We're also going to be talking about Black Friday shenanigans, consumers behaving badly on Black Friday. So I'm sure Eric is going to have some good stories. We're also going to be talking about internet scams and hacking and the different streaming genres that exist. So hope to see you then at 7:30 Eastern time.
All right. That's and all. You people who are in love with Tori, you get to see more of her on that podcast. You have an announcement, Scott. Let me guess. You have a new book. Is that the announcement?
You bastard. No. I don't. Tori, I have one request for your show, though.
Sure. Let's hear
that
it.
That video you were going to show of that guy acting really crazy on Black Friday trying to get the Cabbage Patch doll.
Is that you?
It's a vintage video, but don't show it, please. I was just I had a bad day that day, okay? My daughters really wanted the Cabbage Patch doll, and I had to get it at all costs. I apologize. Don't embarrass me. Don't show that video.
We'll see what we do.
There's enough of Black Friday mayhem that we will have no problem finding another example.
Thank you. Okay, here's my announcement. January 15th, mark that date. What date is that? At 4 o'clock in the world famous Russian Samovar restaurant in downtown Manhattan, yours truly will be hosting a book signing event for this book. There will be a dinner associated. The price of the ticket may seem steep. It's $135, but that includes everything. That's the book. That's the dinner. That's a shot of vodka, and that covers all taxes and gratuities and the whole thing. Plus, it's downtown Manhattan. It's going to be a great event. It not only supports me, but it supports a restaurant that is in dire need of support right now, especially because of this conflict. Anything that has the name Russian in it is being attacked. These people are being pressured to change their name. I've been a fan of the Russian Samovar for over 30 years. My wife and I have been going there. We knew the original owner. He always treated us very well. The new owner is his daughter-in-law, I believe. And she's a great person. This is a restaurant that deserves the support. And I think people would enjoy the evening. And hopefully the speaker is entertaining. He takes your questions. And rumor has it, he'll even stay behind and make sure every book is signed. So January 15th, we'll have flyers out on that. But I just wanted to put a marker down on the table.
All right. Mark the date, and between now and then, we'll remind folks and we'll have all the info on ScottRitterExtra.com. Thanks a lot, Scott. Thank you, Tori. See you all next week at the same time here for the lightning round, and see you Friday night for the original edition of Ask the Inspector.